What is there about particular cultures that makes some of them more conducive to economic progress than others? That's a very large question whose answer will come from somebody else who will write another trilogy in some later years. At the moment, it's an uphill fight just to get people to concede that there are indeed major internal differences which do not depend upon the outside society. The outside society does, in fact, have its influence. But we can't start from the a priori notion that that is necessarily the dominant influence. Yet any attempt to say that there are any internal factors says that you're blaming the victim. But, of course, you don't blame somebody for something that happened before he was born.
The Trayvon Jackson Podcast.
Oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. I got a dope discussion for y'all today, man. I want to address Thomas Sowell first, and I suggest that if you're on a path of elevation and evolving in life and finding your purpose, go read some Thomas Sowell books. He's a dope brother, though. But what I took from that perspective is that you got to let people be themselves, man. We can't try to control people. That's what creates chaos. Let people be themselves. One thing that I learned from watching The Star Report, if y'all don't watch The Star Report on YouTube, is that he preaches objectivity and having an objective perspective. And what's healthy about being objective is that you can let people be them. You can have an opinion. Your opinion doesn't mean that it's right or that it's wrong. Everybody has different thoughts and different views of things. But on this podcast, man, if y'all see the title, it's a secret society. All we ask is trust. Before YouTube was created, before I purchased my first iPhone, I had no clue about Freemasons, the Illuminati, what people was doing to get in position in Hollywood, sacrifices and all of that old type of stuff. And just the crazy things that we hear on the internet and on YouTube about secret societies. Now, this topic and this discussion came to mind when I was listening to Suge Knight's podcast, and he was talking about the involvement that Diddy has and who he learned this thing that he's doing from, how he learned it and who he learned it from. And it was interesting to me, man, and I just wanted to convey the message with y'all and just have a dope discussion. Let's get to it, man. It's the Trevor Jackson Podcast. Let's go.
Jackson Podcast.
So I'm going to give y'all a rundown on the topics of discussion before we get into it. So one of the topics is going to be hip hop, the landscape of hip hop. It's just, you know me, I'm an artist myself. I involve myself with streaming numbers, just hip hop in totality, the past, the present, the future. I just love hip hop in its totality. The conviction of Bishop Lamar Whitehead. It's interesting now. When we first heard of Bishop Lamar, his church was being robbed in New York City. And he had on a whole Gucci suit then. And it just struck my attention. I just want to talk about Christianity, religion, and pastors in general. It's just not, I'm not going to be specific about him. I'm just going to talk about religion in general. And then sports. Nick Saban was in D.C. the other day talking about the NIL. He in D.C. and he had a message about how the NIL is going to change the focus of the child and the future of sports. And I agree with him on some of the things that he said, but let's not get into that. I want to talk about the weather's changing. The taxes are due. And if you're a criminal, you better stay in the house. Because as we've seen this week, multiple individuals that's in the hip hop community has went to jail. At the end of the podcast, I want to talk about the secret society stuff. I don't want to get into that too early. I want to talk about it at the end because I don't want to run folks away from the conversation. And we got to talk about some sports stuff too, man. Isaiah Thomas, he wants an apology. Joe Budden had Candace Owens on the podcast. Oh my goodness, boy, that was a great podcast. Ye went on Big Boy. When he went on Big Boy, he said some things, and the things that he was talking about was like, I'm going to play the clip already.
And of this music game, I am, but not Andalusian. Mm-hmm. And saying I invented every style of music of the past 20 years. I created the genre. I created weekend genre, Trav, Drake, you know, everybody. I'm going ahead and say, with all love, Future and Thug also, because the Auto-Tune album, 808s, if you think about it, everybody think about Trav, Weekend, and Drake, but no one thinks about Future and Thug also, the Auto-Tune album. Now, everyone, they added what it was to it, but here's a new genre. It's called Making Your Own Money genre.
I love Ye. I do. I think My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy is the best album ever created. But I have to disagree with that. You didn't invent every style of music for the last 20 years. That's cap, dog. When it comes to using auto-tune, T-Pain did that, man. We got to give him his flowers. When it comes to my favorite album, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, Pusha T wrote that. We got to give him his flowers. When it comes to 808s and Heartbreak, Kid Cudi did that. We got to give him his flowers. Ye, I love you, dog. I love you. You are a very creative individual. I love you. But one of my homeboys said, man, that cocaine different in Hollywood. That cocaine different. It got him acting crazy. Ye, he dope, though, man. He did a lot with the shoes. He creates and arranges music and the best producer maybe ever, man, with the soul samples and how he constructs albums and all of that and arranges albums. He's hard. Pause. But at the end of the day, you can't take credit for everything. You didn't create everything in the last 20 years. And I'm not the only person saying this. It's a lot of other people saying that you didn't create trap and it's a whole nother genre. You didn't create the music that Lil Uzi Vert and Playboy Cardi them doing it. And what's the homeboy whose song he stole? That's gone now. Designer. Panda. You took that man's song. You may have elevated it and made it sound better, but he created that style, even though he stole that style from Future. Ye, come on, man. Like, I've been waiting to hear Ye on an interview. But when I wait for it and he say blasphemous stuff like that, I'll be like, man, go back into hiding, dog. Even though I love your music, I love your creativity, and I love what you do. It's just that sometimes you can't be so focused on yourself like that, man. But I ain't the only person saying this. I'm going to read a tweet that Lil Boosie put out. Now, Lil Boosie, I don't agree with all the things he be saying, but I still stay in tune with individuals, even though I don't agree. Because some things I may agree with. People have faults. People be wrong at times. And people be right at times. But Lil Boosie said this about that comment that Ye just made. Not all genres. Not every style. Stop. Not Boosie music. You can't relate to nothing I rap about. Or your music. Nobody listen to Kanye in the projects or the trenches. I'm going to go ahead and say it. My people don't relate to you. Now, just last week, Boosie put up a tweet that Eminem doesn't get played in the projects. And I agree with that. But Ye different. People play College Dropout in the projects. Ye from the projects. From the trenches. He just not of the trenches anymore. I'm from the trenches. I'm just not of the trenches anymore. But I got to disagree with that also, Boosie. even though you got a point that he didn't create all genres of music. That's true. But one thing I like about Ye is that he's staying competitive. He's still trying. He's releasing music independently, and the album went number one independently. Big salute. Big salute to Ye for going number one independently over Usher after Usher performed in the Super Bowl. That was big with Vultures. But one thing I got to say about Vultures and everything, that Ty Dolla $ign is one of the most creative artists in the game, and he's just now getting his shine, and I salute that. I appreciate that. I appreciate Ye putting Ty Dolla $ign in position, because when Nipsey was alive and around 2014-15, I'm going to tell y'all three artists y'all need to go check out their back catalog from those years that I just said, 2014 and 15. Ty Dolla $ign, Dom Kennedy, and Nipsey Hussle. They was dropping great records around that time. I wish they would have dropped a collective album at that time, because they put the West Coast on their back and they took off with it. Now, I was saying, I like that Ye's competitive. I like that. But when I look at hip hop in totality, it's not competitive. Artists are chasing a bag. They're not creating quality. Me, I'm quality over quantity. If you listen to my last few projects, I did them with minimal features. I had my cousin Jack Boy on the project. The reason I had him on the project is because Jack Boy ain't coming to play when he come to rap. He's not coming to play. He's coming a distance to meet me in the studio. He's driving 2-3 hours, and he's not coming to play. He got his records. He got his verse already wrote. He memorized it, and he coming with the energy. Me, I write my raps months ahead. I go to the studio, and I lay the whole album down in 5 to 10 hours because I'm not coming to play. It's quality over quantity. And hip hop doesn't look like it's competitive no more. Nobody wants to be the best. Everybody wants a check. And in the era I grew up in, 2003, that's when I released my first project, 2003. But from 2000 to 2005, I would say around that time, that's when hip hop was the most dominant. The biggest genre, the biggest sales, that's when it was the most dominant. It may not be your favorite. Now, I'm going to remain objective, but I'm going to speak some facts. It may not be your favorite era, the 90s, the 80s, whenever you like now, 2020, may be your favorite era. But from 2000 to 2005, the most dominant, no cap. And everybody was competitive. Everybody that dropped something was competitive. Now, I was listening to an artist talk about that era. And then he talked about the landscape of hip hop today.
Tell me what you see when you look out into the landscape.
I haven't taken a real deep look out into the landscape, but from where I'm sitting, it looks like J. Cole is the only one being competitive. He's the only one who's rapping with the kind of conviction that says, you know, like, I still value the number one spot as a lyricist. Mm-hmm. Yep. I see where a lot of, especially the younger generations get, I see a lot of them not really hanging their hat on just the lyrical part of creativity at all. Like, they're finding different ways to impact and to resonate with people. Like, you know what I mean? Which is fire.
Yeah, that's fly.
You know what I mean? Fly. That's when the elder statesmen like myself start trying to learn. You know what I mean? I want to make myself understand. Like, why is this touching people like that? I can't even understand what they're saying. You know what I mean? So I think it's cool. I think it's evolving. I think it's moving forward. It's definitely moving away from lyricism being the caveat, which I'm cool with, because it's a lot more things that I can do besides be just like a, you know,
lyrical.
That's true. I agree with Royce the 5'9". Salute to Detroit, the 313. I respect y'all boys. Keep doing y'all thing. I'm looking forward to hearing more Big Sean music, man. Big Sean was a competitive artist around the 2010 era. That's an era that slept on also. let me stretch that era out. I said 2000, 2005, 2000 to 2010, because 2010 is when we got the Wale's, the Big Sean's, the Drake's, the Kid Cudi's, the Cole's, all the rappers, the Kendrick's, all of those guys. And that was a year that was phenomenal for hip hop in totality. It might be the best year for new artists. Now, what he was saying about competitive, J. Cole is the only one being competitive. J. Cole smashing everybody on records right now. When he gets on your record, you're getting smashed. Benny the Butcher, smashed. No disrespect to the people he smashed. Drake, smashed. Pause, too, with the smash comments. And he just obliterating niggas, man, when he get on their records. But it's an artist I want to highlight and saying that he's being competitive also. Ray Vaughn. He got a song with Pusha T called Problems. Ray Vaughn. I ain't going to pull no clip up or none of that or play none of his music. Just go research it. He signed to Top Dog Entertainment, who Kendrick used to be signed to before he went independent. And Ray Vaughn is nice. I haven't heard nothing this refreshing in a long time. He's refreshing. Real talk. He's refreshing. Go check out his music, Ray Vaughn. Go to his Instagram or whatever and salute to Pusha T, because without Pusha T, I probably wouldn't have never heard of him. I ain't one of those dudes that's just out researching and searching and looking for new artists or whatever. The only way I'm going to catch you is if you done dropped that heat off. If you ain't dropped that heat off, I'm going to miss you. Now, switching the topic. I got to switch the topic. I'm energetic about this podcast. I'm going to tell y'all why, too. This is the last podcast for about 2 to 3 weeks. I'm about to go on a fast, get back in balance, because I feel like I'm off balance a little bit. And just kick it, man, with the family, my loved ones, man, and get some money. That's all I'm going to do. But I'm going to come back better than ever, like I always do, man. You know, some people think that you have to be consistent with podcasting or whatever, but I think taking time off sometimes helps you evolve and elevate. That's just my perspective. Now, Wednesday, I was catching DJ Academics' live stream. He had Aiden Ross and Charleston White on his live stream. Charleston White was refreshed. He was hyped up. He was talking that talk. And I disagree, like I said at the beginning of the podcast, I disagree with people at times. Sometimes people, they just say wild stuff. I disagree with Candace Owens at times. I disagree with Charleston White at times. I disagree with Jason Whitlock. I disagree with the things that Donald Trump say a lot. But I'm going to talk about Trump in a minute also, and my political views and who I think I'm voting for. I got to give it to y'all. I'm going to tell y'all who I'm voting for this year already. Before it even breaks down. No, I'm not, because I want to be able to milk the conversation until November, because that's when the votes are due and all of that old type of stuff. So, Charleston White, let's get back to the conversation. Let me get back to it. He talked about Vlad in his live. He talked about Diddy and gangsters and homosexuality in his live with Academics. I never seen him and Ak do a interview together. I've seen them, you know what I mean, throw shots at each other, but I never seen them collaborate. And they was just on a live stream talking, having a ball. It was 3:30 in the morning when this live was going on. I was like, oh, yeah, this is something I can check out before I pass out and go to sleep, man. And I got two clips that caught my attention that I think y'all should check out.
You know, them freak offs is, but you know, I was thinking about the freak offs too. If you think about that, I think maybe it was a commonplace in a certain time and era, because I haven't heard of any of the new celebrities doing none of that. It sounds like some 90s shit.
The gangster era. I told you a long time ago on your podcast.
Yeah.
That gangsters and gays go together, huh?
No, hold on. What do you mean, though? Wait. Wait, hold on. What?
Gangsters and gangs have always been secretly friends.
Like, well, how that mix though? How did it mix? I don't get it.
Mass incarceration. Why you think when all the OG niggas get mad from the 90s, they say shit like, if I was in prison, I'd been your ass over. Why you think you hear the OG say that? Why would Ice Cube portray Damon as what he was in Friday? Right?
Oh.
It's such a small scene.
Because Ice Cube didn't write it.
So and so when you think about one out of every three black males in America either go to prison or go to jail. Homosexuality is bred in prison amongst the gangsters and the street niggas. Right? Niggas really rape niggas in prison, right? It ain't the weak raping, it's the strong gangster niggas doing this, right?
Makes sense.
And you never hear they homeboys or nobody come out of prison and shame the gay niggas in prison. You never hear nobody coming out of jail shaming prison rape. You never hear nobody coming out of jail saying, nigga, my homeboy, they keep them homeboy secrets. Especially if he can fight and he kill.
That's hilarious, man. We just seen a clip go viral about Meek Mill saying, when you lose a cellie, it's like losing a girlfriend. I really don't think it's that serious, dog. I really don't have no relationship with men on an intimate and emotional level. I really don't. It's conversational and it's growth and it's about finances and stuff, but I really don't have conversations with men on an intimate level. Now, when I think about gangsters and gays, I had a partner of mine from the hood. He told me long time ago, before the internet ever existed, if you have sex with a man, you're not gay in jail. If you are the inserter, you're not the receiver. If you're the one that's given, you're not the receiver, you're not gay. I said, you gay, cuz. I said, it's gay. I can't relate to that. I can't relate to that. That ain't my type of timing, dog. If you are the receiver, that only makes you gay. If you giving, you're not. Nah, I don't believe that. Now, me, by any means necessary, when I think about the street life, your goal should be to not go to prison. That should be the goal, man. People frivolously going to prison, continuously going to prison. Why? Why? Don't nobody want to be in jail. I love my wife. I love women in general. Never. What's in there that you want? For you to not, I don't care. I'll go do life. I don't give a damn. I'm a street nigga. Nigga, you a sissy. At the end of the day, dog, to be honest with you, you a sissy. You want to go in there and clap them cheeks. You can see a life in there. I can't do that. I'm not built for that. That's not me. It's just not me. The gangsters and gays go together. Interesting. He said something else, though, that was interesting and that really caught my attention. And this is about us as a whole, man. This ain't just me and my perspective. This is about us as black folks as a whole.
I think what Vlad tried to do was, in his explanation,
Vlad is trying to get black people's history in his vault. He's trying to get black and nigga, we don't benefit nothing from what Vlad get from us. And all he getting is the detriment side. He don't show no victims, no nothing. He go get the gangsters who done kill and let them come flourish and relish in the hurt and the harm that they done caused people. And you ain't never heard Boosie apologize to the victims. You ain't never heard no gangster mob dude who done got on there, no OG, apologize to their victims. And I got on there and showed some of the most empathy for my victim because I met my victim's family only to be forgiven. So I can come play whatever character I want to play. But nigga, I ain't been to no prison. I ain't been in and out of jail. I don't have no history of crimes as an adult. None of that.
I think Boosie's issue is that he said you spoke on his kid. I think that's when you had spoke on Boosie's kid and T.I.'s kid.
He an ugly little motherfucker in the ear. But I spoke on his kids because his kid threatened me. See, I spoke on Boosie and T.I. And as I was talking about Boosie and T.I., I mentioned their two sons who had just gotten arrested. And was...
You know... It comes a point in life, like, I remember participating in street activities, but I never glorified it to the world. Even though at the time I was participating in those activities, there wasn't no social media. There wasn't no iPhone. I'm dating myself and aging myself right now, but it wasn't. People go on Vlad TV and glorify dumb shit continuously, consistently. And he has a vault of podcasts, of information. He has a catalog. And that's how people will view black culture, by his catalog. We don't look at it like that when we're participating in it, but that's what he's doing. He has a library of the dumb shit. That's what'll be highlighted. The good stuff won't be highlighted. Me, I want to have an objective highlight. I want to highlight us in a good way, the good things that we do. I want to talk about the dumb shit, but I want to talk about it in a way that we can evolve from it. How can we evolve from the dumb shit, man? Real talk. And I didn't look at it in that perspective that Charleston White looked at it when he said what he said. I commend Charleston White on that conversation that he had with academics on that live. Salute. Now, we 30 minutes in almost. I'm going to play one of my records. I'm going to come back with the religious conversation. Before we get into the secret society, all we ask is trust. Whew. We got some stuff to talk about, man. Nah, you know what, though? When I come back, I want to talk about sports, the lighten the conversation up. And then I'm going to get into the religious conversation and keep it moving. Let's go, though. Let's go.
Niggas didn't want me to blow. It was all a dream for show. Now I'm up and not looking back. Did the racks, now it's deposits. Life is good when you have options. Niggas cap, never been popping. The diamonds ain't real, player, just stop it. All we do is the VV. Shine so bright, the lanes can't see me. Been notorious, no biggie. Did the Louis, now I'm at Poochie. Yo, chicka groupie, act unruly. Niggas goofy, always moody. I'm a dog, call me Scooby. To this gang, you niggas newbies. At Benny's, I just want sushi. Left the streets when shit got spooky. Kept it real, that was my duty. My team keep Drake's, I told the Uzi. Director of my own movie. Make sure the business runs smoothly. Yours truly been evolved. Beef I had won't be resolved.
Yeah. Hey, man, thank y'all for y'all subscription to the show, man, to the channel. Thank you for donating to the Cash Out Wavy Neutron. I appreciate everybody that participates in the show, that leaves a comment. It helps me evolve this thing, man, because I feel like the commentary that I give can be useful, could be helpful to the community, to help provoke thought and to help people understand some things. Now I'm going to switch the topic up and talk about sports. I live in Charlotte, North Carolina. This town feels like Jordan Town. I live close to Mike too. And when I think of Michael Jordan, I think of resilient. I think of willing to die to win. I think of low tolerance for bullshit. I think of a gambling man, a man that's willing to take chances to evolve and to win. I know Michael Jordan involved himself with people in the street after moving her in golf tournaments and stuff, and they used to gamble, and these was real dudes, real money dudes, and Michael Jordan used to take their bread. It's just, I don't think he's a apologetic man. Now, I was listening to Draymond Green podcast, and he had Isaiah Thomas on the show. Isaiah Thomas, pretty soon on his background wall, y'all going to see a signed Isaiah Thomas Pistons jersey. My first NBA game was in Detroit. I went to see Detroit play the Utah Jazz in 2015. Good game. Dope city. Dope city. Black culture. Man, they had the Little Caesars in there, the Hennessy. You could buy a bottle of Hennessy in the Detroit Pistons Stadium. And it was just a dope vibe. All black people. I probably didn't see no white people. Not saying that I don't like white people or whatever, though, but I didn't see zero white people. It was in Auburn Hills, the legendary Pistons Stadium, too, in 2015, before they built the new one. I forgot who was on the team, though, because the game was horrific. It was $100 a ticket. I sat low, too, for $100 a ticket. I sat real low. But off of me and off of my first NBA game and my time in Detroit, Bad Boys. Michael, at that time, I'm going to tell y'all something. Michael Jordan was my favorite player. But the Detroit Pistons was my favorite team. The Bad Boys. Vinny the Microwave Johnson. Joe Dumars, Isaiah Thomas, Bill Laimbeer, Dennis Rodman, John Sally, Coach Doug Daly. A problem, nigga. A problem. Beat the Lakers with Kareem and Magic. Beat Boston with Bird and the Chief. And Kevin McHale and all them boys on the team. Beat Jordan before he had Pippen, though. Pistons was a problem, nigga. And the Detroit Pistons was the real deal, man. Isaiah Thomas was a problem. He was a real problem. He was an arrogant one. And he's from Chicago. We can't forget that part. He's from Chicago. He's a native from Chicago. He's one of the most known basketball players ever from Chicago. The environment, the hood, the high school. He's the truth. Isaiah Thomas was the truth. He was the little man. He was the truth. But when he was on Draymond Green podcast, you know, he asked Jordan for an apology. Now, we see that Horace Grant, Luke Longley, and Pippen is going on a tour to talk about the Bulls and to bash Jordan. But Isaiah Thomas asked this question, and it had me thinking, like, why still?
Anywhere, anytime, publicly. Don't call me behind the scenes apologizing or asking your friends to apologize, right? You got on national television, and you call me an asshole. And then you said you hated me. You said that on national television. Now, if you didn't mean it, get on national television
and say that
and apologize for it. Now, if you meant it, let it ride as it is.
I rock with both players. I'm going to keep the conversation moving. Mike ain't apologizing, dog. I hate to say it, though, Isaiah, because you one of the GOATs to me. You disrespected. Mike was wrong for not allowing you to be on the Dream Team because you was better than... I can't say that, though. Stockton was the truth. I don't know who was better. Tell me who was better, Stockton or Isaiah, in a comment section. Please, help me out. Because I can't say that. But Isaiah was resilient. He was a champion. He beat the best ever. All three of them. He beat the Bulls. Then he beat the Celtics in the Eastern Conference Championship. Then he beat the Lakers. He might be better than Stockton. Without y'all help. But you're not getting an apology, dog. Now, I want to play this Nick Saban clip. It's a kind of long clip, but I'm going to talk while the clip is playing. Nick Saban just recently announced his retirement. He beat my Vols to death, man. My Tennessee Vols. He beat us down for years. I think he's like 11-1 or something against us. 12-1. And the NIL is changing some things. And I kind of agree with majority of what he said in this conversation, because sports and college sports, let's just think about what that is for a moment before I get into the clip. College is for you. Please, young folks, listen to this. Learn as much as you can. Learn your sport. Get as much knowledge from the instructors. Learn as much as you can. Get as educated as you can. Get as much from it as you can. Gain as much assistance as you can. Build as many relationships as you can from college. Don't go into college solely thinking it's only about a check. And how much is this college paying me to play football? Because it's bigger than football. Football will be 12 to 15% of your life. You're going to need more than football. Basketball players, they need more than basketball. We seen old buddy from Boston Celtics spent $120 million in 2 years. I forgot his name. Money is pointless if you're a fool. Everybody think it's about money. But if you're a fool, you ain't going to know what to do with the money. You can give a fool $100 million right now. But if that fool is a fool, that $100 million is worthless. Real talk. Now, I'm going to play this clip. We're going to talk about what Nick Saban is saying, but let's get into it, man.
But you're trying to develop value-based system, just like a value-based business, that would create opportunities for young people to be more successful. So this started with personal development. It started with academic support to make sure guys graduated and had the and prepared themselves for when they couldn't play football. And also the whole concept of branding. And making sure you had an image out there that was going to be something that would be enhance your chances of being successful and create opportunities for your future and see if you can develop a career as a football player. Now, what we've done between freedom to transfer and creating a free agency system where guys can transfer whenever they want to transfer and the whole idea that we've created a pay-for-pay-play sort of model in college athletics have created some issues in being able to actually have a program and a system that would enhance those very values that I just talked about. And how does this even impact other sports relative to Title IX, relative to non-revenue sports? And how do we continue to create some kind of a model moving forward where we do improve the quality of life of the student athlete, but create some kind of a balance in terms of competitive balance, which all venues have some guidelines and rules that create some kind of competitive balance, which right now we don't have in college athletics. It's whoever wants to pay the most money, raise the most money, buy the most players is going to have the best opportunity to win. I don't think that's the spirit of college athletics. I don't think it's ever been the spirit of what we want college athletics to be. So that's my major concern, the combination of pay for play, free agency, and how that impacts development. And I can attest that I've had two NFL coaches tell me, and this is a football deal because they're concerned about the football part, that the players come to them less developed, with more entitlements and less resiliency to overcome adversity. We've worked so hard for the last 20 years to improve graduation rate, to improve health care for players, to have mental health care for players. All the things that we work so hard to improve on, we're going to start seeing slide in the wrong direction because we've created an environment that really does not promote personal development or that is going to create success for their future.
You know, one question I have to ask. You just retired from an amazingly and historically significant coaching career. How much did the current chaos and state of the law contribute to your decision to retire now?
Well, all the things that I believed in for all these years, 50 years of coaching, no longer exist in college athletics. So it's always was about developing players. It was always about helping people be more successful in life. My wife even said to me, we'd have all the recruits over on Sunday with their parents for breakfast, and she would always meet with the mothers and talk about how she was going to help and impact their sons and how they would be well taken care of. And she came to me, you know, like right before I retired and said, why are we doing this? And I said, what do you mean? She said, all they care about is how much you're going to pay them. They don't care about how you're going to develop them, which is all what we've always done. So why are we doing this? So, you know, to me, that was sort of a red alert that we really are creating a circumstance here that is not beneficial to the development of young people.
Now, I took notes for this conversation because it's important. Let me clear my throat. It's important. I grew up in a college town, an SEC college town, Knoxville, the rival of Alabama. The first thing that caught my attention was how the NIL impacts development of players and people. The way it impacts them is that giving folks money makes them comfortable and they do not want to face adversity no more. Facing adversity helps you evolve, helps you grow. When you owe somebody something, when you're dealing with something, when you're stressed out, when you hurt, when you got to get up every day, overcoming adversity helps you evolve as a person. Giving them money or make them comfortable. And they feel like they don't have to do anything no more. And giving a person money at an early age hinders them even more, my opinion. Now, he said that we should want to improve the quality of life of these players, but we need to have balance. Most of these players come up in impoverished communities. Parents broke. Parents working 24 hours a day. They ain't even around the children. Or if they not broke, they trying to survive, man. They struggling to getting by check to check day to day to make sure that their child had the best life possible. When I think about that, I feel as if the players need to get paid. But it has to be a balance. The new quarterback at Tennessee, the college that I love, they gave him $8 million off top. Off top. He don't even have no reason to even want to be good. $8 million? Man, I could change my life. I could make investments. I could do all types of stuff that could change my life immediately. I don't have to be good, man. But I I understand why Nick Saban retired. A lot of people will say Trev, he retired because he can't compete no more. He can compete still, but he wants to win. And the values and the things that he cares about in football does not exist no more. And that's sad. Real talk. He had to go to D.C. to speak with the Congress, with Ted Cruz and them boys, in the place in January 6th where they bum rushed. He went to the highest of the highest of powers to conversate about the financial structure of college football and how it's hindering the people more than it's actually helping them. But the people who don't have nothing will think that it's helping them more than it's hurting them. Oh, man. That's crazy. Now, I'm going to switch it up and talk about something. Have y'all watched King Charles? Have y'all watched Charles Barkley and Gail King on CNN? It was new to me. They a couple of episodes in, but I didn't know Charles Barkley was doing anything outside of the show that he does on TNT with Shaq and Ernie and Kenny. I didn't know he was doing anything. So I looked at a recent episode and the conversation was talking about why do Trump appeal to black people? I'm going to be honest with y'all. The people that I listen to are intellectuals, smart people. I listen to mostly intellectual individuals. And all of the intellectuals are not voting for Biden. All of the intellectuals that I listen to are conservative. I don't even know any intellectuals that's Democrat. I don't know people that talks about education who's continuously learning that looks like me that is Democrat. Most of the intellectuals that I listen to are conservatives and Republicans. The people that's smart, the people that's talking about something, the people that want to see the people like us evolve. Most of them are Republican. And if you are researching educational content, you know that also. Real talk. But this is what Charles Barkley had to say about black people or feels like Trump appeals to them more.
Things that black voters wanted and expected and hoped for in 2020. Police reform, the George Floyd Policing Act, but it didn't pass. Voting rights, the John Lewis Voting Rights Bill, that didn't pass. More progress on criminal justice, the Equal Act, that didn't pass. And so once you get past the emotionality and this, that, and the other, you just kind of look to Charles' point, what did we get for our vote? Look, the economy is better than it could have been. I love a lot of stuff he did. But if you just look at that particular set of issues, you could be disappointed.
Yeah, but
let me ask a quick question. Because, this is, go back to something you said. The reason, and I'm only speaking for myself. The reason I think the Democratic Party and Mr. Biden, President Biden, is losing black votes is they only care about black people every 4 years. They come into our neighborhoods and say, we're going to make stuff better. We're going to do this, do this, do this. And then finally, us black people are like, yo, man, other than my ability to dunk a basketball, all my neighborhoods are still the same. Our schools are still the same. And that's why I think black people are leaving disappointed in the Democratic Party, because I ain't going to lie. I voted Democratic every time just because I thought it was going to help black people and poor people. Because black people and poor white people, they're in the same boat. And like, I didn't care who the president was, I'm not gonna lie, but I only voted Republican one time in my life, and that was for John Kasich, and I didn't even know he couldn't win. But then I'm starting to look like, man, I understand why black people are leaving, want to vote for somebody else, because every 4 years they come into our neighborhood and say, man, we're gonna make things better for you.
Well, I think that's true, and I'll let you go. I do want to point out, though, that poor black folks have been voting for Democrats for two generations, not as much progress as you want. Poor white folks have been voting for Republicans in Appalachia and other places for three generations or four and not that much progress. So there's a poor people problem with both parties. But
I think
that's a fact. And I live in the Appalachian Mountains my whole life. Knoxville, Charlotte. I ride back and forth through the Appalachian Mountains, through the Smoky Mountains. And poor people has not received anything that they want. But I want to say something about black people and voting. Right now, if I had to choose, I'm going to speak on this. I would want us to unite, first of all, and come to a sound decision, a healthy decision, if we could unite as one for an agenda. But that's not going to happen. If I had to vote for Biden or Trump, I would vote for Trump. No cap. People will say, Trev, you tripping. But why they think I'm tripping is because they don't like the rhetoric of Trump. But if you look at the circumstances, at the way of the world when Trump was in office, in comparison to the way of the world while Biden is in office, you would prefer the world to be the way it was when Trump was in office. No cap. Now, if we could unite, I would suggest that we vote for no one. No one deserves the black vote because they do not do nothing for black people, period. If you vote for any of these candidates, what for? You're not getting nothing for voting for them, period, at all. But that's my perspective. And tune in to part two of this episode because I got other topics I want to talk about. And I'm going to stretch this episode out to part two. But you don't have to wait for it because it's right below this one. Thank you for tuning in to the show, man. Peace, love, plenty of abundance. Make sure you go get you some money. And I'm gone. Chill.
Jackson Podcast.